Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Bestseller by Christina Rost. When crime fiction novelist Kelly Landon agrees to write a memoir for an eccentric elderly gentleman, her quiet life turns upside down. Unbeknownst to her, the memoir is peppered with clues leading to a rare collection of stolen jewels from World War II. After the memoir makes the bestseller list, Kelly finds herself in the crosshairs of a decades-old vendetta. Now, instead of enjoying her rise to literary fame, she's thrust into the dangerous world of treasure hunting. While Kelly struggles to win the game of cat and mouse, a secret family legacy is unearthed, forcing her to choose between trusting her charming literary agent or her vigilant bodyguard to keep her safe. As the three of them become entangled in a web of deceit, it's a race to see who's the villain, who's the hero, and who holds all the pieces to solve the mystery of the bestseller.
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, my guest is Christina Rost, who is an award-winning author. She's also married to her high school sweetheart, a mother to three kids. And she writes full-time and has lived all over the world. So I think we're going to have a great conversation about family, writing, travel, wherever we're going to go. So welcome to my show, Christina.
Thank you for having me, and hello from Oklahoma City.
Ah, great. It sounds like you live in Oklahoma City, you've traveled all over the U.S., you spent a few years in the U.K., and you still like to travel?
I do. I have a bit of wanderlust in me. Every now and then I think, okay, where are we going to move next? And my husband's retired now. And he's like, I don't know if we're moving again. That gives me a little bit of fear sometimes.
Oh, yeah. You've had so many different new places to go. So now it sounds like your life is a little more settled. So how do you fit writing into your life these days?
Well, I actually need a schedule. I get very sidetracked. I have found that, I definitely go off on tangents when it comes to research, and I can go down a rabbit hole and start researching a word or researching a location, and then all of a sudden an hour has passed. So I set up a schedule for myself, and my schedule has changed, as you have children and they move out. And I remember the first time I sat down and thought, I want to write a whole novel. My daughter was just born, and I was rocking her, and I put that keyboard up there with me in my lap and rocking her, and I started typing, and I wrote my first full-length novel. And it was funny because I was talking out loud, dictating a lot, and she just kind of listened, and I thought, she's probably enjoying this. I'm changing the plot up a bit. But, it's good that they hear your voice. And so that was kind of my the beginning part of writing. But now, years later, and my daughter's 15 now, so my schedule's a bit different. I'm now, the Uber mom that runs the car around, and I have a schedule with her. But I'll be honest, I have kind of a strict schedule. So on Mondays is my admin day, and I sit down and I do newsletters and all my emails and things like that. I've learned since signing with Scrivener's Press that not only am I just writing, but I'm also, marketing and needing to talk to people and make schedules for things. And I thought, I need a schedule for this. So on Mondays, I do all my admin, and Tuesday, Thursdays are my writing days. And I'm pretty strict. Even when I'm making appointments, I'll have a doctor say, can you come in on a Tuesday? And I was like, no, if that's the last day that you can have me in, I'll come in. But Tuesday, Thursday, my family knows I'm at home, I'm writing, I've got the music going through the whole house. And Wednesday's my errand day. And then Friday, I do fill it. And Saturday, I work on my WIPs that are not under contract. So we all have, as writers, we have a lot of stories that we want to work on. So Saturday is kind of my fun day. And I use that for those things. And Sunday I rest. And I just kind of use that time to pray about my stories or just kind of let my imagination flow, and I really try to rest, and it's church day and that kind of thing. So that's my schedule.
Yeah, no, and I often talk to writers about writing in the time you've got. It's one of the titles of a presentation I give, and just to remind them that they do have time to write, and it's just finding that time and how to look through their schedule and how to block off that time and thinking of it as a business. I mean, it is a business.
Yeah.
If we want to be, you know, full-time authors or even just, you know, put out more than one book every 10 years, right?
Right.
We have to really block out that time to write. And right. we just need to be deliberate about it. And then we say no to our, you know, things that are going to interfere with our writing times. And that can change, you know, depending on the season and where you are in your writing and all those kind of things. But it is important to at least think about schedules and come up with them. So kudos to you for, you know, for trying to stick to it most weeks. I'm sure it's just a great feeling to do that. And you mentioned music in the house. So do you find that music is essential for you to write? What do you have other things that are essential for you to write?
Yes. So I love music, and typically it's music without words. I love classical. Now, I can't have piano music that plays a song I know because then I start singing the words in my head. But I love music. I love thematic music. And I will listen to music for a scene. A lot of times if I know I'm writing a scene and my characters are in the car and it's raining, and I think I have one scene where he turns up the radio just because he's a little awkward and he's like, okay, we're having an awkward moment. I got to turn up the radio. And I thought, ooh, what's he listening to? I'm going to go look for a song. I know. I'll look for a song and I'll say, this is on the radio. And then if they're dancing, there's a scene in the cellar where they're dancing to Tchaikovsky, and I thought, oh, I'm going to turn this song on and just imagine how are they dancing? You know, what are the notes, and are they moving in a fluid movement? Is it a kind of a stuttered step? So I do. I love music. I love music to set up a scene. And even if I'm in a coffee shop, I just throw my headphones in, I turn that music on, and I just try to transport myself there.
Ah, that's wonderful. Wonderful. Music can be very, very wonderful. So I tend to not listen to music when I write. I like the quiet because I get too distracted by that. And I've just learned to tune out other things. People know that when they know my writing times, if they come in, you know, they know that they just kind of hover in the doorway. So I kind of know they're there, and then they wait for me to finish my thought, and then I can turn. But they try not to interrupt me. But it is kind of funny. I like they're like I can feel them like lurking. I'm like
Yes. You can feel a presence. You're like I know they're down there.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. What's occasionally one of my teenagers will say, Mom, I've been standing here a while. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm in the middle of, you know, I'm in this other world. You're trying to draw me out of it, but. Anyway, so what about, speaking of other worlds, romantic suspense? Why romantic suspense? What about this genre that drew you to write?
Okay, so, you know, I've always been drawn to romance as far as I remember just in middle school. You know, I was definitely the girl that always had hearts on her books. Was drawing little hearts and things like that and reading little romance books. One of my first authors, I'll never forget, my mom bought me the, I think it was a four-book series by Janet Oak. And I read her Canadian series, and I just fell in love with it. But as I got into my late 20s, I started being really drawn to Frank Peretti and Ted Decker. And I loved that kind of mysterious, what's going to happen. But I was missing the romance. I thought, wait a minute, there's going to be something here. So I went back to Sweet Romance and started reading. And every time I read a Sweet Romance, I would close the chapter and think, but what if, right? I would be like, okay, what about that creek in the attic? Now you have to understand, I was an only child growing up. I had a great imagination. if I heard a thump in the night, I have developed the whole story behind that, right? So
yeah,
I would do that. I would read a sweet romance and think, wait a minute, what in case somebody started chasing my heroine and hero, you know, or they're on the run, or what if they found a dead body? And I started thinking, well, okay, what do I do with that what if? And then I was kind of introduced to, you know, writers like Irene Hannon and Diane Mills, Lynette Eason. And at that moment, I was like, this is it. This is the sweet spot for me in writing. So I feel like writing romantic suspense gives me that opportunity to do romance because I love all the feels. And then it helps me jump into my what ifs. And so that's why I do it.
Yeah, no, I was chuckling to myself when you talked about reading the sweet romances. And I love a good romance. You know, a good romance is fantastic. But sometimes I'll read one and I'm like, what, wait a minute, nobody's trying to kill them?
Right.
they have no mystery to solve except for whether or not this guy's going to like them. I just, yeah, so sometimes my mind does jump off there. Sometimes I'm able just to enjoy the story and they carry me along. But occasionally if they have any kind of hint of that, then I'm like, my brain just goes there. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not reading that kind of story. I'm just reading the straight romance, which is perfectly fine. They're lovely books. And, but yeah, I am like, well, someone's not dying. I keep thinking, I don't think I could actually write a story where there wasn't some mystery danger element to it. So, not that I want to. I mean, I'm happy writing romantic suspense. So, I will continue on that. So let's talk about titles for your books. How do you name all your titles? You mentioned that you have a publisher. Do they name your books? What's up with that?
So I don't know if this is strange or not. I usually come up with a title before I even start writing. It's in my head, the concept of the story, and immediately I'm like, this is it. And of course it just sits there in my head. And a lot of times, I remember, especially with bestsellers, so originally when I started entering contests with this story, it was called The Bestseller. And I'll never forget when I saw it up on a screen, you know, it was a finalist and it said The Bestseller. And I thought, that does not look right. I was just so drawn to the title, right? I was like, oh, no, that looks so bad. And I thought, I need it to be two words. It was going to be a series. And so I like to play with it, but no, I've named mine, but I usually come up with the title before I write the story. And also I'm kind of weird about titles. I don't usually tell people them until we're very close to being published. And I don't know if it's like having a baby, you know, where you're like, I'm not going to tell anybody, or I might say half the title, or I'll say this is my working title, but it's not really.
So, right.
I don't know if that's strange. Is that an author thing? Maybe that's one of my author quirks. I kind of keep my title. I don't really flaunt it out there for everybody. And so
yeah, no, I think that's an I think that's one of your author quirks. No, maybe other authors do that. I don't know. I guess, you know, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I have to call my – sometimes I'll do, like, book two if I'm writing a series and I don't know. But most of the time I like to have an idea what the title is, and that may not be, like, one of my titles have changed, and, like, my book – one of my current books out last year, Justice Delayed, I had that titled When Twilight Comes, like, and that was the title, and I had two other books that kind of continue that theme, but I'm like, no, that's not, when I finally decided to indie publish that, I was like, no, that's not the right title, and changed it, and everything, but yeah, it's titles are interesting. I don't mind sharing them. They're not specific. But I don't name a lot of my characters as I'm writing my book. The main characters have names when I do my rough draft. I hardly name them because that's something that if the name doesn't come to me, like occasionally I'll like, okay, this secondary, this is what she's going to be called or he's going to be called. Most of the time I'm like, I don't know what detective who came to investigate the break-in at the house is going to be called. So he or she will be Detective Bracken. I just,
That's great.
And then when I'm editing it, I go back and I have a book of baby names and I have some old phone books. So I'll go back and find the first name and then I'll look for a last name in the phone book. So, but that's my little, that's one of my little author quirks because I never know what to call people. Yeah, yeah.
Right,
so sometimes I won't share those. I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know.
So let's talk about readers, because without readers, we would just be writing in a vacuum. We love you, readers. Please continue to read us.
Right,
What is one of your favorite ways to connect with readers?
So I love face-to-face contact. I am definitely one. I love having coffee with somebody and just talking story. And I'm finding after my first book was published, I was like, this is so fun when you sit with somebody and they're a reader and they've read your book and they're looking at it from a whole different perspective. I'll never forget the first time I sat down with somebody and she had planned, hey, can we meet for dinner? It was two ladies. And I said, sure. And they're like, we want to talk to you about your book. I thought, oh, this will be fun. I can't wait to answer questions. She actually had like tabs and highlighters all through the book and she had questions. And I thought, wow, like I didn't know, I've never done that to a book unless I was studying, right? For a test.
Right, right.
And she like had questions. She was specific. And I thought, this is amazing. And it really gave me an insight into certain readers and how they really look at a story. And if a line hits them, I mean, they highlight it. They might write it down. They want to know where you got it. And it's really opened up a world for me. So I do. I love face-to-face. I love talking to people. I love it when they ask questions and you can share. Because sometimes you don't know if you're oversharing because it might be cool to you, but maybe not cool to everybody, right? Like, this is how I got there. And so I love that. And then I love to put little treasures in my book, and I love to do that so that if I have like a launch team or a book club, those are the things I'll share with them. I might say, hey, that street that I named in the book was actually the street that I grew up on or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those are the trends. So I love to put those in. I try to do that in every story. I kind of go through and say, okay, you know, what can I put in here that's fun that they can maybe search out? So I think that's a way to connect.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. And I like you. I've been doing more like craft fairs and festivals in the fall where I get to talk to readers, either people who've known my books or meeting me for the first time. And it is just fun to talk about what they like to read, what they like about my book. And so I've had some repeat customers like, oh, I bought one of your books last year. I'm about here to buy another one. And that's just, it's just fun. It is fun just to talk with them and hear that they're excited. Because that's why we write. We write because we have these stories and we need to get out. But we also write because we want to be read.
Well, and our stories are like our imagination. And it's like another layer to our personality. It's like, You're welcoming these people in, and then all of a sudden, when they walk in, your imagination, and you're like, "Come with me," and it's a whole new world, and it's exciting. It's like a new friendship on a different level. So
yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much for being on my show. That's all the time we have today, but it's been a pleasure talking to you, Christina.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm Sarah Hammerker, and I'm glad you joined me today. Stay tuned for an excerpt from Christina's, one of her latest romantic suspenses, bestseller.
Now an excerpt from Bestseller by Christina Rost. Hampton Roads, Virginia. Kelly Landon sat at her desk in her home office and groaned. The main character in her latest crime fiction novel wasn't cooperating today, and neither was her word count. Her phone rang twice before she succumbed to her literary agent's ringtone. After mulling over the same scene for the last hour, an interruption from this caller was a welcome one. "Hello, Declan. This better be good," She pressed her black-rimmed glasses back onto the bridge of her nose while balancing the phone between her cheek and shoulder. I told you, no calls until I finish this rough draft. She covered her mouth, attempting not to laugh at her forged displeasure. I know, I know. I'm glad you're focused, writer girl. Declan McNeary's lyrical voice ignited a flame in her veins. She imagined him leaning back in his chair with his long legs propped up on his polished oak desk while the sun from the bay office window bathed him in a golden light. Daydreaming about his unassuming Irish charm, she sighed. That's me. Focused.
Good to hear. How's the story going today?
Adam's being interrogated. Declan snickered. Unlike her story's main character, Declan didn't model brawny masculinity. He was fit without the bulging muscles, and he looked more at ease in an expensive suit than changing attire. Her agent was tall, handsome, and loved reading the classics. She blew out a breath, putting to flight the wispy bangs on her forehead. Didn't hurt to dream, did it?
I have a favor to ask.
Huh? She spun a pencil between her fingers, then plopped it into the jar on her desk.
I received a request for your writing services.
What does that mean? I have no interest in ghostwriting.
Hear me out. I know how you feel about interviews and fans, but this is different.
He paused, giving her anxious thoughts ample time to multiply.
Mr. Abram Zucker's looking for someone to collaborate with on a historical memoir about his parents' life.
But I write fiction.
So?
She slumped back in her chair. It's a memoir. I have no experience writing something like that.
It'll be something to stretch that inquisitive mind of yours.
Declan's amusement floated over the phone, and she envisioned his mouth curving into a seductive smile.
Mr. Zucker's a wealthy man, very involved in the local arts council. He has what he's described as a group of historical love letters he'd like you to review.
The idea of writing about a couple's life doesn't sound the least bit intriguing. She blew out a long breath. It sounds more like a love story.
He guffawed at her answer. Love stories aren't so bad, are they?
Besides, the Zucker story unfolds in the middle of World War II. There's bound to be some intrigue there. Adjusting her grip on the phone, she took off her glasses and pinched the bridge of her nose. I'm just not sure. You said he wants to meet me? Her messy bun bobbled on her head as she shifted in her chair. Can't he just send the letters over and I can see if I want to take the job?
This will be like an interview, not really a meet and greet with a fan. He wants to see if you're someone he can work with.
That doesn't sound intimidating at all. Her tone dripped with sarcasm.
You're a fantastic writer. This should be easy. Besides, you'll beguile him with your witty intelligence, I'm sure.
Butterfly wings blossomed in her chest. I don't know about that. I've only written 2 books. 5 if you count the 3 YA disasters. Her previous young adult books were science fiction, but after feeling alienated in the world of aliens, she'd left that cosmos behind and attempted to write something new.
Kelly, Declan's mood turned serious.
Abram's a fascinating man. He has some old journals and documents from the war he wants you to look over. She rubbed her sweaty palms on her sweatpants, then switched the phone to her other ear. He knew right where to hook her.
From what I've gathered, Abram has a world of information locked away in his brain, stories from his childhood. Maybe you can unearth any skeletons hiding in his closet.
His melodic voice dipped into a villainous tone, and her toes curled in her slippers. Are you sure he asked for me? She wandered into her living room, where she sank into the sofa and pulled a soft Angora blanket over her lap. I mean, there are so many other capable writers out there. Carmen Sanchez and Julia Winters have written memoirs for retired senators and athletes.
Kelly Rhea Holt Landon, her lungs constricted. Your Treasure House Publishing's leading author. Your 2 novels are climbing the lists, and there are readers out there clamoring for a third. I've shopped your series at a few production companies. Do you hear what I'm saying? You could have any one of the New York publishing houses eating right out of the palm of your hand if you played your cards right.
The fervor in Declan's voice carried over the line as a tremble of nervous energy shot through her. She imagined he no longer sat at his desk, but instead paced in front of his large office window. Most likely, he'd taken off his reading glasses while he ran his fingers through the soft waves of his dark, honey-blonde hair.
Kelly, are you still there?
Yes.
What do you think?
I was thinking about your sun-kissed hair. She fidgeted with the drawstring on her sweatpants.
I don't think you understand how good of a writer you are and what you mean to Treasure House. But what do I mean to you? Okay, I'll do it.
Really?
Yes, if you think this is a good opportunity, then I'll do it. Declan continued to explain more about the interview and the eccentric and very wealthy Mr. Abram Zucker. I want you to know I'll work closely with you on this. You'll probably get sick of having me around.
I doubt it.
That would be nice. Thank you. She frowned and glanced down at her clothes. Her favored sweatpants and university t-shirts didn't hold a candle to the sophisticated clothes of the women Declan kept company with. She'd need to change her wardrobe.
By the way, what crime is Adam solving this time? Declan asked.
Actually, I'm thinking about crafting it into a romantic thriller. She swallowed hard. Flirting didn't come easy for her, and neither did lying. Could I ever tell him how I feel about him? Her heart galloped like a herd of mustangs. Probably not.
Ah, I didn't think you were the romance type.
Well, there's a lot you don't know about me, Mr. McNary. She smacked her palm on her forehead. The slapping sound echoed, and she hoped it didn't carry through the phone.
I'll bet there is, writer girl. When you get a few chapters done, send them my way. I'll let you know what I think about your romantic thriller.
His words washed over her like ribbons of silk as she walked back to her office and stammered out a goodbye. Laying the phone down, she settled into her desk chair. Instead of placing her fingers back on the keys, Kelly picked up a fashion magazine and sifted through the pictures, trying to ascertain what style fit her. Punk rocker? Nah, too bizarre. Makeup model? Too plastic. The first lady? Too matronly. Surveying her outfit once more, she grimaced. Anything would look better than this. Declan's words of admiration rushed at her while her fingers landed on the keys and tap, tap, tapped in a marching cadence across the keyboard. She imagined her tall Irish literary agent cast as the hero who saved her from the ho-hum life of sweatpants and dusty journals. The winter the flower bloomed. Scratch that. Too adolescent. The summer I woke up.
Nope. Sleeping Beauty.
She typed on the keys late into the night and compelled her mind to find the perfect mix between romance and crime.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.